The Inside Edge, your weekly deep dive into the world of the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Presented by your Greater Columbus Kia dealers and the 2020 Kia Telluride. Give it everything.
Here's Bob McGilligan and Jody Shelley.
Welcome to The Inside Edge, presented by Kia, here on 97.1 The Fan. Bob McGilligan, Jody Shelley with you. The Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs have played two games in their best-of-five qualifying series, and each team not only has won one apiece, but each team has shut out the other team one time. The Blue Jackets winning the first game 2-0, and then last night it was the Toronto Maple Leafs handing it back to the Blue Jackets and blanking them by the score of 3-0. So, Jody, it was certainly opposite day in game two from game one. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, they did a lot of things, but what they really did well, quite frankly, is defend against the Blue Jackets, didn't they?
I was really surprised, Bob, at how well they defended in game one. I thought they were going to be a much looser team in the defensive zone, away from the puck, just cheating for offense. But Sheldon Keefe, their head coach, has them on the right page, on the same page in the defensive zone. They were really, really in tight around the front of the net in game one. Blue Jackets found a way to get in there, though, in game one. In game two, it was much, much different, though. They played a style of hockey where they found the weak areas of the ice. They used each other very well to get out of the zone clean and keep their speed, and really had the Blue Jackets on their heels for most of the game. I do think that the penalties, listen, no one scored on the power play, but it just takes away from your rhythm, especially when you're a four-line team like the Columbus Blue Jackets who just want to roll and be repetitive in their attack and feed off the line in front of them. When you have the penalty kill and the power play, I think that really just got things a little out of whack. And the Blue Jackets, you know, there was times where it felt like they were going to take over or get their simplistic game going, starting in front of their netminder Korpisalo, who was, I think he was first and second star last night, the way he played for his team. Definitely for the Blue Jackets, he might have been all three. But, you know, it's too bad he played that well, and the Blue Jackets could not find a way to solve Anderson. But I think, much like the Leafs and how they tipped their hat to the Blue Jackets, they made their after game one, they made their adjustments, and they went and had a great game two. I think the Blue Jackets just need to tip their cap to the Maple Leafs. The series is tied. They need to make a few adjustments. They would have today looked at some positive video, some places where they could be better, and I think they're prepared to rebound in game three.
Yeah, and the Leafs were able to get some of those odd man rushes. John Tavares had a breakaway on Jonas Korpisalo in that game. Some of those things that just did not happen in game one. And how much of that was the Blue Jackets pushing, or how much of that was just simply bad luck? Like, especially on that Tavares goal where Zach Werenski gets in deep. He's trying to turn the puck, forehand, backhand, back and forth there. And he loses it, and it happens to go right to the stick of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Was there some bad luck involved too?
I think you create your own luck, and I think the Blue Jackets, when they're playing their game, it really is impressive because the opposition is – they almost look like they're smothered, you know. As soon as they get the puck and get their toes pointed towards the Blue Jackets' net, there's a player right there in front of them. There's another player to collect the puck. They're just in sync, and when they look a little bit out, I think the opposition looks a little quicker and a little more organized. Listen, I credit the Maple Leafs. I really think they made some key adjustments. You've seen them get in the zone and make low-to-high passes, which stretched out the offensive zone for the Leafs. There was hesitation with the Blue Jackets in some of the plays that the Toronto Maple Leafs made. So it was I just think you tip your hat to the opposition in this one. And I think you credit the Leafs in making the adjustments and doing what they did. Are the Blue Jackets upset with the game they played? Absolutely. They didn't dictate the pace. They didn't win puck races. They got out of their way and threw body checks that they didn't need to throw. They were looking for anything to slow things down instead of just focusing on their game. I would expect them to make the adjustment for game three.
You know, it's funny. You and I just talked a couple of days ago after game one, and we talked about that in particular. I was making the comparison that if you go back to the early years of these playoff runs against Pittsburgh, sometimes the Blue Jackets were so worried about getting the body on some of the big offensive stars that they started to run around too much and started missing assignments and all of those things, and it ultimately cost them. And, you know, they may have played into some of those old habits there last night.
Well, I think so. I mean, I saw Cam Atkinson start the third period with a big body check on the wall, and I'm thinking, okay, that's I don't mind that out of a leader. But I'm also thinking, you know, where's your head at there? Is that – I just wonder because you're right. When they played the Pittsburgh Penguins a few years ago, remember they'd get on the forecheck and Pittsburgh would wait, take the hit, and as the hit came, they'd flip the puck out to an area, and then there'd be an odd man rush or a situation where the Pittsburgh Penguins would be, you know, breaking out of the zone – cleanly. And I think when the Blue Jackets are at their best, they're not running out of position. They're inside a lot, in between the dots. They're crowding people with the puck and taking away options with sticks and layers. There were some good things last night, but just not enough early. And then really disappointing they couldn't find that at all.
And when you look at the Maple Leafs, and we talked about this after game one, about the Blue Jackets finding a way to frustrate them. Last night, even though they didn't get a goal until there were 4 minutes left in the second period, I didn't get the same sense that Toronto was frustrated. And maybe that's because they spent the entire first period doing almost whatever they wanted to. They led by a ton in the shots on goal after the first 20 minutes. So I kind of got the sense that even though they weren't on the scoreboard, they knew that they were doing things that would eventually get them on the scoreboard, as opposed to Sunday, where it looked like they just continually shook their heads and said, what are we going to do to beat this team? They couldn't figure out a way. Did you get that same sense?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I watched the broadcast and I watched some of the national, the Canadian national one, just to see what those guys were saying about the Maple Leafs. And Craig Simpson brought up a great point. He said that, you know, game one of a series is not always a great game. It takes a couple games in a series for teams to figure each other out. And I thought that was a pretty interesting point. You know, he's a guy that's won a few Stanley Cups, and he's a guy that, you know, when you get to the finals, it's the Western Conference versus the Eastern Conference. And these are two teams that haven't played each other in 9 months. So the Blue Jackets did exactly what they wanted to do. And what he was saying is that the Maple Leafs were probably out of sync. I was really impressed with how hard Matthews worked to score that first goal. I mean, he worked for 60 minutes in game one and came up with nothing. And he worked for all that first period and a part of that second period. And then finally he got it. And after all the good chances he had, he just deflects one in, you know, all those grade A chances that the Leafs had. So I was impressed that he stayed with it. I tell you what, I think a lot of people would have packed up a little earlier or shut down a little earlier. I got frustrated a little earlier. But I was impressed how hard he worked to get that goal. And then Tavares, to me, looked like he was in disbelief a couple times. He got lucky, he got sprung on a breakaway and squeezed one past Corposalo. But you know what I mean? Like there was one point where he looked at Corposalo and he said, are you kidding me? Like, are you kidding me? Because he was in a grade A place to score a goal and he shot it, and Corposalo, it was just in perfect position and ramped off his stick and went in his belly. So, you know, those things happen. I thought Corposalo had set some frustration in on them, even though the team hadn't played great. Jonas was unbelievable in there. And that sometimes can be even more frustrating because, you know, you get the opportunities and you make the play and everyone thinks it's going to be a goal and somehow it bounces out behind the net. So you're right, Bob. There was a level of frustration in game one. Game two, I think these guys look confident in their adjustments. And I just think the Blue Jackets need to now go back to worrying about themselves, and they will make adjustments. And boy, we're in for a heck of a game three. What's that going to be like, I wonder?
I don't know. Again, I didn't think game two would look like it did, and so I certainly don't know what game three is going to look like. Let's talk about Auston Matthews for a little bit here, because he's no doubt a rising star in this league. But, you know, we only get to see him a couple of times a year anyway. You only play against the Toronto Maple Leafs three times. This past year, we only saw him two times. So having a chance to see him now play two straight games and knowing that you're going to get to see him play at least two more, maybe three more, you know, when you look at him and look at some of the other rising stars in this league, where do you put him once you get to watch a couple of full games from him? Where do you see him being?
Well, the biggest and the brightest is Connor McDavid. He lives on another planet. I mean, it's not right what he does. He's got the code book on whatever's happening with each and every game, and his skill set is, I mean, I marvel at how fast he is. Well, when I look at Auston Matthews at these two games, I'll go back to what I just said. How hard he works, how much he battles, And there's a saying in sports, your best players need to be your best players for you to win. Well, that's what happened last night. I thought that the best players were their best players for the Leafs. But Austin, he just dialed it up. I mean, listen, Seth Jones took him for a rough ride. Zach Werenski in game one. Game two, I mean, you would think that he would shy away to go to a puck. He worked hard at both ends, and the goal that he scored started down in front of his goaltender, Frederik Andersen. So, again, I'm tipping the hat to the opposition. This is what you do in a series when you lose a game like you did last night. Auston Matthews is the head of the snake, so to speak. We've heard that term from prior coaches. And you know, that's the guy that drives it for that team. And you can tell and you can see why he's such a coveted player and a number one pick from Phoenix, Arizona, who ends up in Toronto as the center of that franchise. And he's going to be there for a long time. But the way he battled, I think that impressed me the most, Bob. His skill set's ridiculous. He can make plays in a phone booth. He makes quick decisions. He knows what he's going to do. Like, there was a play last night where two players went after him in the corner, and he couldn't wait to get his hands around that puck and get that puck out to the one player who is free. Because, you know, that's when you have two players on you, someone's open, right? He just thrives in those positions, and he put it in a great spot. So it's just it's been fun to watch. And the Blue Jackets, along with Korpisalo and to a man, need to find out a way to really try to keep him limited, because when he gets going, you could sense everyone's going.
You know, it's funny you say he's going to be there for a long time, because, you know, they're just with the situation the Leafs are going to be in with a cap somewhere down the road, and not even too far down the road. You know, there's always been these murmurs, and not from Auston Matthews, but I think there are a lot of people that they at least wonder if someday he may return to the desert. You know, especially if the Arizona Coyotes can kind of figure everything out there. It seems like when they have figured it out, then something else happens, like their GM ends up resigning right before the playoffs. But again, that's not going to help the Blue Jackets in this series. But I just wonder somewhere along the line if a kid like that returns to the desert and tries to really, really boost what's going on there.
It's interesting, isn't it? He didn't sign the max deal. He signed a 4 or 5 year deal with the team. He's going to go for another big contract after this one. He'll be a free agent at the time. Very interesting situation. So, yeah, stay tuned. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah, stay tuned is right, because coming up next, we're going to be joined by Jonas Korpisalo. The Blue Jackets goaltender has been the star of the first two games. I also want to tell you to be a part of the excitement when the Blue Jackets finally do return to Nationwide Arena. You can guarantee your seat with a Blue Jackets ticket plan, and each plan features flexible payment and scheduling options. To get more information, all you have to do is grab your phone and text the word ticket to 37664. Back with more of the Inside Edge presented by Kia on 97.1 The Fan. This is the Inside Edge presented by Kia. I'm Bob McElligott along with Jody Shelley. And without question, the star of games one and two of this playoff series against the Maple Leafs for the Blue Jackets has been their goaltender, Jonas Korpisalo, and he's with us right now. Jonas, you've gotten the chance to start and play in this series against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and boy, have you looked good. When you came back and got ready for training camp and went into that abbreviated training camp, did you know that you were going to start? Did you know it was going to be a competition between you and Elvis, and you had to be at your best? What was the mindset when you got back over here to the United States?
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing planned before. You know, I knew it's going to be a battle between me and Elvis too, who's going to get the first nod. And, you know, try to do my best in the training camp and get ready and work on the little details to get myself game ready. And, yeah, I think it went pretty well.
You know, all those scrimmages during the training camp at the ice house and those goals, you know, everybody, it's easy for media people especially to sit there and go, oh, this many goals are given up by this guy and this many by this guy and all that stuff. But at that point for you, it was just about getting back to getting the feel of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you know, the scrimmage scores were like, I don't know, 6-something and 11-5 and stuff
no
like
defense.
This.
No defense. Yeah, no defense in those games.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little bit, you know, it's good to get the, you know, some scrimmage there, you know, get the game feeling a little bit. And obviously, you know, try to work on some stuff during the game, you know, timing and reading the game and what you don't get in the normal drills during practice. So I think that was really good. And, you know, know, he's got to look behind the score numbers too. And, you know, there was always something you worked on, and I think that was really good.
Jonas, how did you feel after the exhibition game? I mean, that is strange to get there, try to figure out the bubble, and then you get in there with the Boston Bruins. And how was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was really good to get the health of the exhibition game. First real game in 4 months or something. So, felt pretty good, and 30 minutes out there, and get ready for the real games. That's all you get, and then try to make the most out of it.
Well, I like the torch went with you. I mean, you've been with the organization for a while. You work your butt off every day. We've seen it. But for some reason, I made a bad prediction coming out of that exhibition game. I just thought, for some reason, I thought they would go with Elvis. Not that they should have, but I was like, I just thought Elvis had more work. I'm an idiot, and I just want to let you know that I am an idiot. So you're the right guy, obviously, you're both great goalies. But I'm glad you got the net, and boy, your game one and two, you are locked in, man. What's the feeling like in that arena?
Yeah, it's a little bit different, no crowd and stuff like this, but it doesn't take away the feeling that you know that we're going to play some big games right here, and everyone's locked in, and going out there, and you don't think about the rink or arena or anything, and just the game feeling that it's going to be huge games. It feels really awesome, and it's been fun games to play, and the whole team chipped in front of me. It's been great battles for the first two games.
I wanted to ask you, because I was nervous before game one. I don't know why. I have no reason, just because it's playoff hockey. And I was trying to picture myself being a player in there. Do you get even more nervous because there's no fans or there's no emotion? Did you feel anxious and nervous to get in there and feel that puck right away?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, that was a long day. Game starts at 8 o'clock and, kind of waiting for the game all day. I don't know, that kind of gets you anxious, just winning for the game whole day, and you're like, okay, let's get it started already. And I didn't think about the crowd or anything, puck drops, and you don't think anything else than stopping the puck, and one job right out there. So just really excited.
Talking with goaltender Jonas Korpisalo of the Blue Jackets, and you're an experienced guy. I know that in game one, that was the first playoff start that you had, but you've been on this team, and you've sat on that bench, and you watched Sergei Bobrovsky play in these big games. And, how much of that experience of just being a part of it and observing and watching how much work it's going to take and all of those things, how much of that have you put into play and has helped you to be successful in these first two games?
Yeah, I mean, being part of the team in the last, previous playoffs, and, have some experience about you just sense the little bit of a different feeling during the games. It's more intense, people are really amped up, and, you feel the momentum changes are a little bit bigger as well. And, it's a little bit different than the regular season games, but, I just try to go out there and be myself, There's no things I need to change on my game. Just go out there and, do my best and enjoy the game.
Well, doing your best in game one resulted in a shutout. And I think that there are only 14 guys that have gotten a shutout in their first ever postseason start in the National Hockey League. And look down at the list of names, it's pretty impressive. And, oh, by the way, your name is now on that list. Has that sunk in on you? Maybe that's not a big deal while a series is still going on, but doggone it, man, that's a pretty good accomplishment.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a matter of a real good game as a team overall. I don't care if you win the game 10-9 or 1-0, it's just great to have the first win out there and, enjoy the win and get the win as a whole team.
The game two, Austin Matthews gets the first goal for Toronto in that game. That guy is all over the place in your zone. He has been for two games. You know, you've played against the best in the league, obviously, not just this year, but in your time in the National Hockey League. As you watch Austin Matthews, and I'm sure you try to keep one eye on him because you know he's always going to be in the play. What do you see from that guy? What, you know, what tendencies, how do you have to react when it is his shift and he's on the ice?
You know, they have a bunch of really dangerous guys, including him as well. You know, got to be aware of him, you know, really creative guys and, you know, just be aware of him. Good shooters. And, you know, as I said, I don't want to change anything I do. Just, you know, kind of make the read that they're out there and they can pull something out of nowhere sometimes too. So just be extra aware a little bit and, you know, just be myself and play a game, you know.
Jonas, we're almost 24 hours away or after that loss last night. Can you take us through kind of what you went through after in the bubble? It's an early game, so you ended early. You guys spent a lot of time together last night, and what did you do today for prep for tomorrow's game?
You know, just after a game, you know, just, you know, it's over. You know, we go day by day, you know, doesn't matter anymore. Series is 1-1. Get a good skate today and rest up for tomorrow's game, and I think we're really ready for it.
Did you feel the disappointment? I mean, you guys just look like, I mean, you saw it in front of you. It just looked like they didn't play that Blue Jacket brand of hockey, did they? There wasn't the forecheck, and there just was a little too much of watching what was happening around them?
I don't know. I mean, you know, that was one game, and, you know, as I said, series is 1-1 right now. I don't want to overanalyze it. You know, I'm 100% sure we're going to be a lot better for the next game, and you know, it's one game, it's over, and we move on.
So, and then the preparation that you had, so you were in Finland, we talked to you a couple times over there, and yeah. I mean, we didn't know what was going to happen, and we fast forward to this, and you're in the NHL playoffs, and you pitch a shutout your first game. What do you think was your, I mean, the preparation and not knowing how it was going to be, are you surprised at how you got to the top of your game that quick?
Yeah, I mean, that was something I thought of when I was back in Finland. I was like, you know, it's a little bit weird, you know. No ice sessions for a lot of the time I was back home. How to get back into the game groove when the moment happens. And, you know, that's something I thought of a lot, you know. Try to, you know, prepare my body and mentally whenever the call comes to get back to U.S. and start the season. It's, you know, got to be ready for it. And yeah, I mean, it's a little bit different scenario. Usually I skate 2 months before the training camp even starts, and now I skate for 2 weeks before the two-week camp, and we're already playing playoffs. So, yeah, something I thought of, but, you know, you just try to work on your game when I got here, and I think that went pretty well.
Do you do any video work? The goalies do video work on shooters?
I don't do
it. Just on you?
I just, you know, review my games and, you know, what to work on and, you know, what should I have done better and, you know, kind of take the positives out of it and, you know, stuff like this with my the goalie coach, Manny Legas.
And he's really helped you with those videos and settling down. I mean, you're very controlled in the crease. I'm not a goalie coach. I don't know anything about goalies, but I know you used to get a little bit more out of the crease. You've really controlled that, haven't you?
Yeah, that's something we've been working on for a while here now. And, you know, he's been really, really good getting me, you know, pointing that direction, you know, kind of not overworking there and, you know, being in control, and truly helps a lot, you know, controlling pucks and being in the right place.
You know, one thing we talked about when, you know, the height of the pandemic was, especially for the goalies, how do you practice getting angles and taking shots? I mean, there's no way to do that. You can't get on the ice. Nobody can shoot on you. What do you do? I don't know what the heck you did, but, man, you seem like you are in position to stop everything that they send your way. And I think John Tavares would agree with me, because I think last night at one point he basically said, what the heck, when he thought that he had a goal earlier in the game, and you got it right in your chest. I mean, you are dead square to almost everything. So what did you do? Did you do anything as far as that, or is it just come back to you and here you go?
Yeah, I did work on my hand-eye coordination. You know, that's only thing you could have done in the Corona time. I mean, you know, I do gym sessions and, you know, mixing in some ball throwing on a balance pad and stuff like this, you know, at least something. So that's, I don't know, you know, just try to make the most out of it. And yeah, that's basically what I, you know, only thing I could have done.
I think what we've learned from this is that you've overtrained in the past. I mean, I think you can just go 2 weeks. that would be my selling point. You know what?
Haven't we all
gone way too much? You know, I think 2 weeks and I'll be good to go. Do you think anybody would buy that? Do you think even Manny would let you get away with that?
Probably not.
Hey, I want to ask you, Jonas, just about you've been in the bubble just over a week now. Is anything getting old? And what do you miss from outside of the bubble?
Well, you know, just, you know, going out to eat and, you know, see friends and family, you know, of course, family and girlfriends, you know, stuff like this, you miss a lot. And, you know, it is what it is. Everyone's in the same spot, you know. But in the meantime, you know, we have, you know, we spend here a lot of time as a team. And I think it's really fun, you know, just hang out with the team and do stuff together, you know. So, yeah, it's been real fun. You know, just the stuff they build up here, it's a really nice setup here. So it's been fun.
Now, the Rangers left the bubble today. It was the first team to go. Did you see them leave? And it kind of like, you know, one team is gone. You're trying to move forward to be the last team there or actually go to Edmonton. Did you see them leave or did you get to interact with them at all?
No, I didn't see them leave. You know, but obviously, you know, that makes you feel like, okay, we're going to be the last team in the bubble, you know. You don't want to be in part of that kind of stuff, you know, leaving early. We're here to stay.
Jonas, as Jody said earlier, you have been so much fun to watch. It's great to see you do what you're doing, and we wish you nothing but the best and good luck in the rest of this series.
Thank you.
That is Blue Jackets goaltender Jonas Korpisalo. Hey, I want you to know that even though you can't go to the games, you can still participate in the 50-50 raffle. It's presented by Kemba Financial Credit Union. The proceeds will benefit the Columbus Blue Jackets Foundation and their fight against pediatric cancer. And to purchase tickets, all you have to do is go online, visit bluejackets.com/50-50-raffle, and that will get you set. Back with more of the Inside Edge presented by Kia here on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge presented by Kia. As Jody said in the last segment, teams are starting to leave the bubble. The New York Rangers are the first ones out. And the Rangers were swept by the Carolina Hurricanes. Ironically, during the regular season, it was the Rangers that swept the Hurricanes, but the shoe is now on the other foot. Jody, watching that series, what did you think of the way the new and improved Carolina Hurricanes, and I say that because they made some deals at the trade deadline that I had forgotten about, what did you think about the way they handled the Rangers?
Yeah, you know, you forget about the Hurricanes and how great they are and how hard they work and some of the pieces they have. I mean, Pesci was a player that was really underrated, but he is one of the best defensemen when you see the way he plays the game. They picked up Edmondson because they had injuries on the decor. He's a guy that won a Stanley Cup last year with the St. Louis Blues. Their goaltending situation, to me, when you look at it, you think it's full of holes. But those guys got it done. Those guys, Reimer played yesterday. And before that, you know, they had McElhaney a year ago. They just seem to patch through the tandem goaltender thing. And they make it work. So, for me, they're impressive. And, you know, they brought in Williams later in the year. There's a lot to this team and a lot of these teams that you forget. They picked up Trocheck from Florida. I mean, he's a fun player to watch. He would have been one of Florida's top players, play with a guy that would play with their top players. So I picked the Rangers to win. Their goaltender got hurt right away.
Hey, your predictions are dead on here in these playoffs, yeah, obviously, as we go along in the show.
It's a full reveal show, you know, Bob. Why hide behind a curtain when you can at least admit when you're wrong? Doesn't happen very often, but at least I own up to it. So, yeah, I had the Rangers, and I don't know why. I just thought they had a lot of good rhythm coming down the stretch. And, you know, I forgot they were young. Panarin didn't look like Artemi Panarin. And unfortunately for them, they're out. And the Carolina Hurricanes, Well, I tell you, there's some teams in that seeding round the round robin, the guys that are already qualified, that probably don't want to play against the Carolina Hurricanes because they look like they found their game right away here.
Henrik Lundqvist played the first two games of that series. He did not play game three. It's probably pretty likely he won't play for the New York Rangers again. It could be the end of an era with Henrik Lundqvist. He was your teammate once upon a time with the New York Rangers. And I thought he played well, by the way. In those two games, it wasn't like you said, man, if they had another goalie, they probably would have won that game. I think he performed well, but they didn't go with him in game three. They tried to switch it up. If it is the end for the King in New York, how big was he there, and how tough is it to kind of see him move on from there?
Well, it's weird to think of the Rangers without him, but we've seen the turning, the passing of the torch, if you will, to the two young goaltenders they have. Shea Sturken is a superstar. So he's one of the players that is going to get this team. Panarin is there now. You know, there's been a lot of great players that have played for the New York Rangers. I remember a time when they had Yager and Straka and Lindros and Shanahan. They had an unbelievable team. They didn't win a cup, but they were stacked. And, of course, always Messier was there. You know, I think Lundqvist was the next true blue Ranger after Messier. I think they've always had that piece that they've – you know, there's something about the Ranger blue. When you think of Mark Messier, I know he was a great Oiler, but you think of the Ranger blue when you think of Mark Messier – when you think of Mark Messier – and when you think of Henrik Lundqvist, you think of the same thing. The fans there chanting his name, King Henrik. You know, he was great there. He was a pillar to a lot of great teams, some good runs, and he'll be missed. We'll miss he's a superstar. I mean, he's a guy that might be one of the most popular players or recognizable faces on a few continents. You know what I mean? Like he's well known. And so he came in the right city. He did the right things, and he really planted himself there. And if it is the final for him, he did a fine job, I'd say, Bob.
Tell us about your time as a brief teammate with Mark Messier.
It was very brief. So I was
I know it'll be a short story. That's all.
I went to Rangers training camp when I was 18 years old. And I went to the locker room to figure out what dressing room I was in. And it was just at an arena in Playland, New York, in Rye. And I looked at this list outside of the locker room, and it said Leach, Lidster, Kiprios, Messier, Shelley. And I looked at it three times before I opened the door. I opened the door, just a regular hockey door. And they're all in there talking and laughing. And my equipment is sitting between, Glenn Healy and Nick Kiprios, and they're telling stories about the weekend. I'm like, I was just putting my gear on thinking, I'm just waiting for someone to come in here and be like, kid, you got to get out of here. You're in the wrong room. But anyways, I sat there, put my gear on, and went to camp. It was a highlight of my – probably one of the biggest highlights of my life. To that point for sure, but maybe ever.
Oh, I love that story. Thank you. The other New York team, the Islanders, had a chance to eliminate the Florida Panthers earlier today. That did not happen. The Panthers are able to hang on, and they win the game by a goal, and so they force another game in that series. Look, we all know how tough it is to come back from being down 2-0. But for the Florida Panthers, we talked about what their deal is during the regular season. They went and they got Sergei Bobrovsky. But he can't do it all alone. The defense of the Florida Panthers is not the defense of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Their forwards, they have some really talented guys. They get an edge on the Blue Jackets there. But that defense didn't help Bobrovsky most of the year, and even in the first couple of games in this series. But he got enough out of it today to squeak out the one-goal win and stay alive.
Yeah, I mean, that's the value of Sergei Bobrovsky. You know, he's going to give them a chance to win. And you know, it's not the defense of the Columbus Blue Jackets. They do give up too many cross-ice passes and odd man rushes. But once they can slow that down a little bit and they have a goalie like Sergei Bobrovsky, it's going to be good. Like, Sergei's got to figure out where he fits in there with that organization. And I think the players have to figure out how to play in front of him. They looked pretty good today. I wouldn't say they played a full game, but they played well enough to win that game. So they're back in the series. They've got some hope, and we'll see what happens. I think they're back-to-back to play again tomorrow night. And that's the funny thing about game 3 and 4 in these best of fives. I think they're all set up as back-to-back. So it comes quick, fast and furious, Bob.
Yes, it does. And coming up next, we're going to talk about what the Blue Jackets have to do if they want to retake the lead over the Maple Leafs in this best-of-five series. This is the Inside Edge presented by Kia on 97.1 The Fan. Show your support of the Blue Jackets this postseason with the team's official postseason shirt. Proceeds from each purchase benefit the Columbus Blue Jackets Foundation. Get yours by visiting bluejackets.com/fanpack. Bob McElligott and Jody Shelley ready to wrap up the Inside Edge presented by Kia, the Blue Jackets, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. Game 3 of their best-of-five series coming up tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Well, Jody, Game 2 is in the past. It's in the books, and now the Blue Jackets have to look to this Game 3. So, when they went back and the coaches went over the video and the players went back and looked at things and probably thought about it for a long time after the game the other night, what must they do here in Game 3 to change their fortunes, to get back to the success that they had in Game 1?
They got to get more jump in their game, more determination on a lot of situations without the puck to start. I thought they controlled the game in Game 1. In Game 2, they let Toronto control it by letting them get stretched out a little bit, running around. But the key number one is stay out of the penalty box. It cuts the rhythm. It lets the best players for the Toronto Maple Leafs just touch the puck, have the puck, feel the puck, be on the ice. And it takes some of your best players, like Dubois, who's not killing penalties, and it sits them on the bench. And it just kills the rhythm and the flow of the bench. So a four-line team like the Columbus Blue Jackets, they need to stay out of the penalty box and allow your team to play. They need to play on their toes, and they all need to just have the initiative to play from inside out. Protect the blue paint. We saw odd man rushes last game. That's not a characteristic of this team. And get the forecheck going. Make the adjustment so that you can get in on the forecheck with speed on the first guy and get in there and disrupt the breakout of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Toronto broke out the puck, way too easy in Game 2. And that allowed them to get out and then into the Blue Jackets zone. Blue Jackets need to get the forecheck going, maybe take the body if they can, but I think the key is going to be in front of their net and then, again, trying to just get out of their zone cleaner and not allow Toronto to get out of their zone so clean. I mean, the Blue Jackets, too, few passes, just a tape-to-tape pass. It seems like a simple thing, but the Blue Jackets weren't doing that, and that disrupted themselves and their flow of getting out of the zone. So, kind of a mixed bag there, Bob, but to sum it up, stay out of the box, good passes, good forecheck, and disrupt the Leafs from getting out of their own end clean.
You mentioned Pierre-Luc Dubois. I want to ask you about him. John Tortorella was not pleased with him during Game 2. This guy is your number one centerman. They do expect a lot out of him. He can bring a lot. What did he bring in Game 1 that he didn't bring in Game 2, and what must he provide individually in this third game?
He's a physical presence, and I don't mean throwing the body. I mean just taking up space with his size, imposing his will on others, being that player that is just tough to play against, because when he has the puck or when he doesn't have the puck, he can move so fast. He can change the momentum of a shift or change the direction of a play. I just need to see him a little more determined on the puck in some of those plays. I thought a few times he was cruising a bit or, trying to make a long pass, and this Blue Jackets team is really good at making that short play, those in tight plays, and that's what Dubois needs to be, is more, you see him on the forecheck using his big body, but he's also changing gears with the puck when he has it. There's a determination level he has.
And is it fair to say that, when he's playing with that tenacity, when he's playing in your face, that he's a major difference maker? He can be a major difference maker in a game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a young man, but he's built like a swimmer, and he understands how to use his body. There's been times where you think of some of the three-on-three plays in overtime this season. He'll bait the player to come in slow and thinks he's got the containment on Pierre-Luc Dubois. And as soon as he gets there, Dubois uses that momentum, like Forsberg used to do, and just spin off and use the momentum you've just pushed on him to get away from you. He's very good at that. He's good at keeping his hands away from his body when he has the puck, keeping it away from the defenders. And his feet and the way he chatters them, he creates separation pretty quick. We didn't see that drive from him. But, yeah, I would say you're accurate in that.
And defensively for the Blue Jackets, we talk about their guys there. They're all solid. They can all play. You know, I'm really interested to see what changes John Tortorella is going to make. And that's not just personnel changes, line changes. I mean, he had them all mixed up by the end of game two, just trying to find something. I'm interested to see if he can find a formula for this third game.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I thought he had a pretty balanced line sheet there to go into game one. You know, Wenberg, Atkinson, Foligno, that's a good veteran line. That's a line that two guys scored on that line in game one, but they also did a great job against Tavares and his line. That matchup got away from them a little bit. I don't know. I mean, he's got the pieces that he can use, and one thing Torts does well is he goes with the guys that are going in the moment. So, listen, whatever he starts with tomorrow night for game three, if there's a player on one line that's being a bit of an anchor or slowing things down, I mean, then he'll switch it up. So he's got to go with the hot hand. This is a short series. It's now best of three. So look for him to really, really dig in here and see what combination he can get out. Not to really match up, so to speak, against the Leafs all the time. He will be the home team now. That changes it a little bit for him. But maybe to take it to the Leafs a little bit in situations where you can put a lot of talent or speed on the line and try to jump them and just look for him to change the look throughout the game quite a bit.
And the last thing for you on this, the Toronto Maple Leafs were under incredible pressure after losing the first game. They may be in a bubble, but that bubble happens to be in Toronto. They know everything that's going on, everything that's being said about them. They responded really well in the second game. But how much is that pressure still there for them? Or because they are the Toronto Maple Leafs, is that pressure just always constantly going to be there because of who they are?
That's an interesting point. I think it is. I think it's they understand the pressure. When Mitch Marner walks away from game one and sees he hasn't had a shot on net, I think that obviously really burned him. He took a shot his first shift last night in that game. Yeah, he's going to be, these players, they feel the pressure, they understand the pressure, they want the pressure, but you're right, they also understand how quick this series is going to be. So pressure's on both teams right now, but you're right, I think the Leafs, they always get the best of the opponent because they are the Maple Leafs and everyone wants to just knock them off because they get all the attention. So, you know, they're used to it. Now it's up to the Blue Jackets to rise again.
I did forget one thing, Jake Muzzin gets knocked out of that game at the end, which was terrible. I know they took him outside the bubble to a hospital, so there's going to have to be adjustment by the Toronto Maple Leafs there. He is – I think he's their number one defensive guy, obviously. How much could that change what the Leafs are doing defensively, which is their weakness? I mean, their forwards are their strength. Defensively is where they're a little bit weaker anyway.
He reminds me of David Savard, not just because of the beard, but for the intangibles he does down low. He blocks some massive shots in game two. He does a good job of keeping the game simple. We hope he's well. There's been positive reports, but we hope he's well. And that's going to be a big hole to fill for the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll see. But you know what I mean? You're right. They talk about their back end being a little weak, but I have been impressed with how they've stayed within their limits and understood their roles and played within their system pretty good back there.
Game three tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, the Blue Jackets and the Toronto Maple Leafs. This best of five series is tied at one game apiece. Somebody is going to really get into the driver's seat of this series. They're going to get their second win, and they are going to be one win away from advancing. Which team is it going to be? That's what we're going to find out. Tomorrow night's pregame coverage can be heard starting at 7 o'clock right here on The Fan, and the puck will drop at 8 o'clock. We'd like to thank Blue Jackets goaltender Jonas Korpisalo for joining us tonight, and that's going to do it for this edition of The Inside Edge presented by Kia. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott. Thanks for listening to 97.1 The Fan.